Hey, everybody.
That was an incredible teaching. It really was. And I'm just amazed at how blessed we are. Because I can tell you, I am sure, Gina's got, what'd she say, four interpretations of the Tao Te Ching, or translations of the same. And I'm sure there's interpretations in those books. I'm sure none of them contain that information that she just shared with us. I mean, talk about, you know, I mean, she's a perfect demonstration of that. It's not like she sits around and thinks, well, what could this mean? I mean, that we're experiencing the flow of truth through Regina as she teaches. And it's just really beautiful. And I am thrilled to, I'm thrilled to be here. To hear it. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. So anyway, thanks for letting me go on about that. We are here for the way of effortless mindfulness. Well, we're here for as it is, but what we're doing in this program is reading Lauren Kelly's book, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. And last time, which has, you know, been a couple weeks, I had a move in the meantime. As Don said, I moved to my little cabin, my little condo cabin. It's really weird because it feels like a cabin and not a condo. So it's just funny that, anyway. So here we are in my new home, and that's why I missed the last couple of weeks. But when we finished up last time, or the last week, whatever it was, I think we had a holiday in there too. When we finished up last time, we were just finishing a chapter called Awakening Glimpse by Glimpse. And at the end of the chapter, Locke gives several glimpse practices. You know, he's told us what we're doing, what we're opening up to, what we're transitioning from and to, and how this whole thing works. And then he gives us a bunch of glimpse practices. So we're going to start, yay, with glimpse practice. And I don't know how many of these we'll do. We'll just see how it feels as we go along. So I am going to, I think, just share the sound. I figured out earlier how to just share the sound on my computer. So let's see if that happens. And I'm coming. The better? Good? Okay, thank you. Okay. Write that in my book, what that speaker is. Maybe next week you all won't have to listen to us trying to, or me trying to figure out what's what. Find a place, a position where you're comfortable, where you can get relaxed, be relaxed, and do this glimpse practice. Chest or belly as it rises and relaxes. Focus your attention there at this one area. Your breath rises, relaxes. focusing on your breath at that area. Feel the area where you are focusing from. Usually, somewhere in your head, behind your eyes. Notice both the place where the breath is rising and the place from which focusing is happening. Without needing to know how you're doing it, feel like you can unhook local awareness from the area from which you are focusing. Feel local awareness, like an invisible bubble of knowing, begin to drop downward. Know your jaw directly from within your jaw. Feel your jaw from the awareness within your jaw. The subject and object located in the same place. Notice that local awareness can move on its own to become aware of your throat directly from within your throat. Notice that you are not stretching attention down from your head to your throat. And notice you don't need to go back up to thought. Know that you are aware of your throat from within your throat. Just be aware of your throat from your throat. The space, aliveness, and awareness in this one area. Now feel local awareness move on its own, dropping down below your neck to become aware of your breath directly from within your chest or belly. So you feel the rising and relaxing directly from where it's happening. Focusing and the focused are happening in the same place. Notice that the breath is happening by itself. Happening by itself. Let local awareness stay with the breath as awareness energy opens to the spacious awareness outside and within your whole body. The space in the room around you from the space in the room. Pervasive within your body, like a seamless field already open awareness. Feel the rising and relaxing directly from where it's happening. You feel what it's like when the focusing and the focus are happening in the same way. Thank you. spacious and limitless. You can be intimately aware of the arising awareness energy in your body, in the room, and directly from your breath arising. Feel the calm, focus, clarity, and well-being from effortless mindfulness. And when you're ready, open your eyes, and I will stop my share. And I will invite you guys to share about your experience with that effortless mindfulness glimpse. Did the telephone bother anybody? No? Good. Dawn says no. That's good. Okay. Well, I can tell you that it feels to me, I feel in a different space. Not that that's, you know, true or possible, but it feels very different than it did. Even as I was listening to Regina, and as you know, greatly inspired by what Regina had to share. Dawn, I know what you mean. Dawn says she's so peaceful that she doesn't want to talk, and that says a lot. Yeah. Dawn, you're funny. Dawn likes to talk. Oh, shoot. Hey, Shauna, what do you want to say?
I'm sorry, we were eating lunch and chatting, so we missed your glimpse.
Oh. Well, good. I hope it was good food. That's quite all right. That's quite all right. Did you have the nice? We had the nice music in the background, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. And your beautiful voice.
Sweet. All right. So I think what we'll do now is let's move on to the next chapter. We'll come back and do at least one more. Hey, Jay. looks like Jay was getting a new tub surround or something in his place today. I saw the contractor there a while ago. Jay's going to tell us. Tell us, Jay, what's going on there?
As the Tao teaching was occurring, the contractor tried to force it into the opening and cracked it.
This You're kidding.
Acrylic backing of a tub surround. So, it was about $400 for that piece. So I had to put crazy glue on it. I had to order a patch kit. So, you know, I could have killed him, you know. Right
there. We're glad you didn't. This means you'll continue to be with us for a while. Go ahead, Jay.
I won't be spending my days in prison.
Right.
So I took the high road, didn't kill him, and just watched myself. And I didn't ever lose a little bit of peace underneath it all. I don't know. That sounds like BS, I know, but I didn't. I had, even amidst this part of me that was pretty upset, somehow over here, there was some sort of peace. I don't know how to describe it.
I don't think that sounds like BS. I think that's what, you know, Natalie talked about. Remember when she was here, Natalie Gray talked about watching Natalie and going, oh, look how upset Natalie is now. Same thing.
Okay, I guess it would
part
be
of you that stays in that space. Yeah. Go ahead.
But it was cool. It was cool that at least part of me did stay in that space. And then I had to look at, you know, where I try to shove things in to make them work and all that, because that's what I reacted to. So I have some work to look at there. Where do I do that? How am I trying to just shove something through, right? Because I wouldn't react to that. I would have had nothing but compassion for him, right?
Well, I don't know, but I think that's a point well made. And I think that's, as you said, the point Regina was making a while ago in regard to the Tao. You know, you're pushing that pendulum when you're trying to force things, and, you know, instead of just letting them occur, seeing how this works out. Yeah.
So that was my tub surround adventure.
Thanks for sharing, Jay. Bless his heart. Okay, so I think what we'll do then is we will move on to chapter 4 of, we're about a third of the way through this book, looks like, of Locke Kelly's The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. That begins on page 65 of his book. It's called Effortless Mindfulness Pain Relief. And it says, Locke says, one winter, I was having a wonderful time sledding with my nephew. On one downhill run, we hit a big bump, and my nephew flew into the air and off to one side. I reached for him and pulled him onto the sled as we hit the next bump. That's when I felt a sharp pain in the lower right side of my back. I'd twisted it. It felt as if I were being stabbed by knives that shot a fiery agony down my lower back to my knee. I hobbled around for months as if I were dragging a wooden leg, trying to not aggravate my injury. Sometimes the pain was pins and needles dull, and sometimes it was intense, but it was a constant, chronic condition. Over the next few months, I visited all kinds of doctors, chiropractors, and acupuncturists seeking relief. The diagnosis was a sciatica, which is a compression of the sciatic nerve in the upper leg and lower back. I went to my primary care physician, who told me he had suffered from sciatica since he had hurt his back in the Korean War. He said, "There's nothing you can do about it except take some pressure off it. I can give you some medication if you'd like, but the pain will never completely go away." Hey, George. "You can do some stretches, but you'll just have to learn to live with it." "I chose," says Locke, "I chose to not take any pain medication, and I tried some alternative treatments, including deliberate mindfulness that gave occasional relief, but the pain remained chronic. At that point in my life, thanks to effortless mindfulness, I had experienced enough of a shift of awareness that I wasn't experiencing much emotional suffering about the pain. But this did not eliminate the continual physical pain." I trusted that all was well and relied on a more deliberate mindfulness approach of observing and not judging unpleasant sensations or feelings, so as not to add more mental suffering to the physical pain. Deliberate mindfulness is helpful with pain because it allows us to separate the objective sensory experience of pain from the more subjective judgments we attach to pain, which color the way we experience it. And you know, we talked about this in our recent retreat with Regina, the fall retreat. George was there and Shauna was there. You all may remember when we talked about pain and the difference between, you know, pain and suffering, and suffering being when, you know, when you got emotionally involved with it, right? That's right. George is pinching his finger. There goes my phone again. It's really funny. I forget. I need to put it on airplane when airplane mode, particularly on Wednesdays when we're trying to be quiet. Oh, okay, good. I'm glad. Thanks, Don. Don says it's not that loud. Okay, so anyway, so we've had some exposure to this idea already, and certainly, and Regina did a teaching on it that we got to listen to through some program, I don't even know which one, a little while ago. Maybe it was through our Gentle Healing Year One, but she did a teach where she explained about being in a lot of pain, crying out to Jesus, and really figuring out the difference between pain and suffering, right? And talking about the ability to just observe the pain without being attached to it. So anyway, let's see what Lux has to say, shall we? He says, while being able to step back and observe the pain from outside was a great teaching of deliberate mindfulness, it was, unfortunately, not enough to relieve my chronic pain. I learned to accept the pain as it continued and thought that that was good enough, seeing that pain is a part of human life with no way around it. But then I became curious. Could effortless mindfulness treat physical pain the same way that it treated mental and emotional pain? That's when I began experimenting, and I had a remarkable discovery. Here's Locke's remarkable discovery. The healing power of awake awareness can be applied to pain in the body as well as to the mind. Locke says, I have found local awareness has an intelligence that can move directly within the signal of pain to its source to see what is true. Then the pain signal goes to the background intelligence of awake awareness. And I think this, and I'm so glad George reminded me about the pinching your finger exercise, because I think this is exactly what that was about, you know? Moving within the signal of pain to its source to see what is true. So let's go on and look and see. Maybe we don't know everything there is to know about pain. So let's see if Locke has anything that he can share with us. He says, page 66, what is pain? Pain is a normal part of human life, and pain hurts. Although pain feels like a threat, pain is not attacking us. Pain is designed to help us survive. Pain and pleasure are signals. Pain is a signal that something is out of balance in your emotional, mental, spiritual, or physical life, and that something needs attention. It is meant to be unpleasant for a good reason, to bring our attention to a potentially dangerous situation until the issue is treated. The sharp, unpleasant signal is designed that way to make sure we drop everything else and attend to the situation immediately. When pain continues unabated after our best healthy efforts to tend to it in a physical way, we look for ways of stopping it, reducing it, or escaping it in any way we can. For example, if you're walking barefoot, thoroughly engaged in a conversation with a friend, and you step on a piece of wood and get a splinter, the strong, unpleasant pain signal is meant to get you to immediately stop all other interest and attend to the wound. If you had a sharp piece of wood in your foot and it didn't cause pain, you might not bother to take it out, resulting in infection or worse. Once you take care of the immediate problem or source, the nature of pain is to eventually go away. Pain by itself is not an entity or an enemy that has any motivation of hurting you. It is an important survival mechanism of our body, a communication tool. By way of our senses, we have contact with experience in and outside of our body that tends to feel either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. We tend to like pleasant sensations, which leads to craving what we like and trying to get more pleasure. And we tend to dislike unpleasant sensations, which leads to rejecting what we don't like. When that strong craving or rejection happens, there is a contraction of our greater sense of self into a specific identity of craver or rejector. And I think I'm going to go on with this sentence, but I think Locke is talking about, and we talked about this a little last night, I guess it was in Gentle Healing. It's like once you form a thought, you don't form a thought without forming a thinker, right? You don't invest in a thought. You don't grab onto a thought and go, I like that thought. I'm going to think about it some, right? Or you don't identify with it unless you are, at the same time, you are forming the thinker of the thought. Into that moment, the thinker, the Jacqueline thinker, or the Susan thinker, the Shauna thinker, at that moment, the thinker comes into being. And I've just had that experience viscerally, and maybe Locke will tell us more about it, and I'll certainly give him the opportunity to speak as well. and I mentioned this, I think, last night in Gentle Healing, but when I had that sit-down with Fred Davis, and through these types of techniques that Locke uses with these mindfulness glimpses, you know, Fred would just led me to that spacious thought where a spacious spot where there is no thought, and being in that spacious place, I could see that in order to have the thought, I first had to believe in the thinker. Okay, that's all I can say because I just can't describe it. Maybe Locke will. Locke says, when that strong craving or rejection happens, there is a contraction of our greater sense of self into a specific identity of craver or rejector. We configure our consciousness into a me that is a thinker or manager that has a strategy to get its goals and desires met and believes that that strategy is real and right. Again, it puts you in relation to the thought, right? I mean, if a thought comes and it just goes and you never, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, and just let it go, you never grab onto a position. But once you find yourself attached to a thought, which you would do with this strong feeling, with a strong feeling of craving or strong feeling of rejection, right? Then you've found, you know, it's that quantum physics things, right? You've taken your position within the field of all possibilities. You know, now you're a solid object in space. Whereas before, you know, before you take a position, before you grab onto a thought, you're kind of free floating, right? You're kind of just rolling with whatever's coming along. But when you take a position, you know, everybody knows what it takes like. Say you get in an argument with somebody, right? You know what that feels like. You know what that contraction in your solar plexus feels like, right? No, this is the right way of doing that, daggone it, or whatever your argument is, right? Once you have that opinion, you become more solid. Your whole identity is in that opinion. And that's the same thing that he's talking about here. I'm going to read it again. We can figure, and this is not something we do consciously. We don't go, let me think up a Jacqueline so she can have an opinion. No, we're reverse engineering this process of what happens. He says, when that strong craving or rejection or opinion, for that matter, happens, there is a contraction of our greater sense of self into a specific identity of a craver or rejector. We configure our consciousness into a me that is a thinker or manager. And that me or manager has a strategy to get its goals and desires met and believes that that strategy is real and right. Craving and rejection are a normal part of our physical survival, like craving food when we're hungry, but they also become our primary source of suffering when they become our identity. So, again, I mean, while we're reverse engineering this thing, while we're breaking it down into its components, parts, here's what happened. Nobody experiences it that way. Rarely do you experience it that way, unless you, you know, grace gives you some real insight into it. But that's what's going on. In order to be that, I was going to say tightly, but that word doesn't seem to get it. But anyway, in order to be that tightly tied to whatever's going on with you, to have that much, you know, we invest ourselves in this, in whatever's happening, whatever thoughts that we have. And, oh, the pain. And you know that the more you focus on the pain, the worse it gets and the worse it gets. And, you know, and if, but if, you know, it, I don't know. Something else happens that draws your attention. The pain, you forget about the pain. You forget that your back's been hurting you all day. You're just enjoying your grandkid or, you know, or whatever's going on, right? So that focus, that attention, that belief that I need something to be different, right? That rejection, that creates the investment, that creates the thinker, that creates the person who is in pain. Locke says, rather than reacting to the pain, we must treat the underlying condition that is causing pain in order for it to subside. It is important to first check out the cause of the pain in every way possible, so as not to ignore, overlook, or deny a potentially dangerous condition. That sounded like his lawyers made him put that in the book. Don't ignore it. It might be, you know, you might die and then I'll be responsible. But anyway, he says, in some types of chronic pain that we know the cause of, like arthritis or sciatica, the nerve signal system is alerting us of an issue, but there's no splinter to be removed from our back or foot. If we have attended to all the medical and alternative diagnoses and treatments and the pain still persists, we still have the opportunity to learn some approaches using our own consciousness to relate to pain differently. I'll just tell you all. You may recall a couple weeks ago I was having vertigo. And I said something to Regina about, well, gee, maybe I'm just enlightened. She's like, don't. She was like, Locke, right? Don't assume that your brain cancer is enlightenment. maybe I ought to get that checked out. So I didn't. I think it was some sinus issues. Locke says, if we've attended to all the medical and alternative diagnoses and treatments and the pain still persists, we still have the opportunity to learn some approaches using our own consciousness to relate to pain differently. And that's the real key. That's what we're looking at in this chapter, learning to relate to pain differently, not, oh, my pain. We're gonna begin to relate to it differently. He says, effortless mindfulness is a wonderful approach that does not in any way attempt to replace, or again, his lawyers got in here. Effortless mindfulness is a wonderful approach that does not in any way attempt to replace or deny diagnosing the cause of pain and working to cure it through any and all means. I am simply sharing this practice as a suggestion of what can be done in conjunction with any medical treatment that might be prescribed by your medical professional. No, I added the last part, but it's so funny to see him do that. Okay, now back to the good stuff. He says on the next page, on page 68, with effortless mindfulness, we can learn to become, present with the unpleasant. See, that's hard to say. So let me read the sentence again. With effortless mindfulness, we can learn to become present with the unpleasant. Locke really likes those little rhymey things, doesn't he? It's adorable. What's he say? Something trained to remain, and there's another one. But yeah, he likes his little rhymes. With effortless mindfulness, we can learn to become present with the unpleasant, an important skill that we often avoid learning until we experience inescapable pain. We may already have experienced through effortless mindfulness how chattering thoughts recede into background awareness or can be met by open-hearted awareness. The great news is that we can do this with pain signals as well as chattering thoughts. They, pain signals, can become like thoughts and go into the background of awake awareness. When the pain signals recede to the background or significantly lessen, we no longer have to suffer silently or try to escape the pain through behaviors of shutting down, numbing, addiction, or acting out. By changing how we relate to pain, we can find a doorway to a freedom that allows us to respond to pain from courage and intimacy. We can learn to be present with the unpleasant, remain sensitive without being defensive, and be responsive but not reactive. And I got to tell you that, you know, I mean, this just seems like, yeah, we're reading about it, but that's just so powerful. We can find through changing how we relate to pain, we can find a doorway to a freedom. A doorway to a freedom that allows us to respond to pain from courage and intimacy. I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it? You know, we spend our whole lives doing this grasping and craving thing, right? I mean, this grasping and rejecting thing. The Buddhists talk about it. No, I don't want that. No more of that, please. You know, get that away from me. And this is like, no, let's fully embrace the experience that we're having. How many times have we heard that? One more time, I'll read that fascinating sentence. By changing how we relate to pain, we can find a doorway to a freedom that allows us to respond to pain from courage and intimacy. And frankly, that's what's that sound like? That sounds like freedom, right? Not just freedom from pain. That sounds like the liberation that we're talking about when we talk about enlightenment, that allows us a freedom that allows us to respond to whatever is in our experience from courage and intimacy. Not fear and avoidance, which is the ego's way. Courage and intimacy. He says, when the intelligence of awake awareness knows directly that there is no immediate danger, the pain signal can go into the background. In my own experience with back pain, the pain no longer needed to send a message from my back to my brain to signify danger or check this out. When I allowed awake awareness to experience itself as awareness energy and embrace and eventually recognize that my pain was not separate from my intelligent awareness, it put an end to any resistance and secondary suffering. When this happened, the pain energy became effervescent. It gave me a strangely warm and blissful feeling. Because I could work with the pain through my awareness in this way, I came to understand that the sciatic pain signal was not because of a ripped muscle or cut tissue or knife in my back, even though it felt like that at times. It was simply a signal to get me to notice the situation, which was not related to a real threat. There's an Adyashanti video. I think it's the longer video on relationship to thought. And somebody is asking him about chronic pain that they'd had since the Korean War, I think it was. But maybe it was Locke Kelly's doctor. But anyway, and he's like, you know, Adi Ashanti got them to really look at it by asking these same questions. Do you have to resist the pain? And the automatic answer was, well, yeah. Well, wait a minute. Let me see. You know, maybe the pain is there, but is the resistance necessary? And so that's what's worth looking at. And that's what he's saying here. He says, by recognizing that this pain, but not trying to reject it, right? That it's not separate from what's going on here. By recognizing that my pain was not separate from my intelligent awareness, it put an end to any resistance and secondary suffering. And that's where the suffering comes from, is the resistance to what the experience is. That's always where our suffering comes from. I need it to be different. So let me suffer until it gets different. So it's the embracing of it that puts an end to the resistance and secondary suffering. Locke says, within a week of starting to experiment using effortless mindfulness, the pain abated. And by the end of the second week, it was at worst an occasional dull ache, like a sore muscle. It has not returned as a chronic condition to this day. I may get a twinge in my back occasionally if I twist suddenly, but even that does not stay long. The other unique change is that pain does not shoot up to my head. I feel it only in my lower back area. This method has not only relieved my own chronic pain, but has worked for many of my clients and students as well. Once local awareness meets and acknowledges the pain directly, most people report reduction in their experience of pain from around an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10 to a dull 2. Though many of us are not taught this, being sensitive and vulnerable is one of the most beautiful dimensions of human life. How about that? Again, it's like, and Anne was teaching this earlier. She was talking about, can I open to this? That's really the only question. Can I have the experience that I'm having? Right? Without resisting it, without grasping for another one. Can I just be here now? Again, he says, being sensitive and vulnerable is one of the most beautiful dimensions of human life. However, if we are sensitive, we are exposed to pleasure and pain on the physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional levels. If our best option of treating pain is to defend ourselves by becoming less sensitive, we will feel less pain, but also less pleasure and less fullness of life. You know, it's that dulling thing. And we listened to Brene Brown tell us that a few weeks ago in that TED Talk, where she's like, you know, you say you can't feel joy. Why can't you feel joy? Because you're always numbing yourself, you know. And then when it comes time to feel the good stuff, you can't because you're so numbed out. Let me grab another glass of wine, please. And that's what he's talking about. He says if our way of treating pain, physical or mental, is to dull ourselves, to become less sensitive, he says we will feel less pain, but also less pleasure and less fullness of life. The interesting process of effortless mindfulness is to become more vulnerable and more sensitive by opening to a subtler, vaster, more embodied dimension of consciousness that also has more courage and support. This is helpful for all levels of suffering and pain, while at the same time, each type of pain may need to be met with a slightly different approach. The good thing is that the natural intelligence and intuition that are available to us as we shift into open-hearted awareness will give us good clues as to how to meet our particular type of pain in the way that matches our unique system. I was thinking, and so it was, I got tickled when I saw that he said open-hearted awareness, because I was thinking, you know, for as you guys know, for a long, long time, I prayed to have my heart opened. And then I began having the experience of that. And I'm like, whoa, turn this off. You know, oh, look at the little bird. Oh, it fell. I'm going to cry for 3 hours, you know.
But it is, and in actuality, it's a real blessing. It is a blessing. It is a blessing. You know, it's like to really be here now, not like, oh, that's a shame. Ah, poor bird. It's a different experience. It's an intimacy with life. Yeah. And that's a real blessing. So let me, I'm going to stop there so we can have an, sucks to be you, little bird. George, yeah, which is how I would have encountered that experience before. A lot like that. Usually that was my brand of compassion towards other people. Sucks to be you. So anyhow, I'm going to quit here and for the day, but we're going to do another little glimpse in the few minutes that we have left. Let me see if I can find one I need to write down, or I will just repeat the same stuff next week if I don't mark it in my book. Thanks, Regina. You're sweet. Regina enjoyed the teaching on pain. Okay, so let's back up here to a... see if we can find one short enough to complete. All right, here we go. So, once again, I will share my sound. And I am going to ask you to close your eyes. Specific area of your body. Notice the feeling of your body in this area as your breath naturally comes. Sensations in your whole body as sensations come and go. Now, be aware of the area is aware of the location you are focusing from. Open the awareness back and out until you are aware of spacious awareness. Of the space, your body sensations, and the location of your breathing all at once. Feel that you are aware of the spacious and pervasive awareness that is effortlessly aware of thoughts, feelings, and sensations. Like a seamless ocean of awareness, arising as the waves of the breath